Welcome to She Designed a Life She Loves. I'm your host, Katrina Lumsden. If you're ready to start designing a life and business on your terms in a soul-led and easeful way, then this is where you need to hang out. With 15 years business experience and having built a thriving interiors career, it is my passion to now show you the possibilities of expanding your interiors business in a way that you never thought possible. With a strong social media presence, aligned business strategies, and the right mindset, your biggest dreams are possible. In this podcast, I'll be sharing with you the energetics behind creating a soul-led business so you feel empowered to go after those big dreams and design a life you love. Now let's dive into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of She Designed a Life She Loves. I am really happy that you've joined me today because I have a beautiful special guest who is sharing all about her success as an interior stylist and designer. So today I am joined by Tara Wokolski. Tara is an interior designer and stylist based in Melbourne, offering a personalized approach to all interiors needs, from initial concepts, internal elevations, bespoke joinery, finished specifications, along with furniture, art, and object curation. She is an absolutely beautiful soul. I've been following her for many, many years and watching her journey. She started out in her bedroom and, you know, just styling and sharing images of what she was styling in her bedroom. And she is now a very successful and highly sought after interior designer in Melbourne. So let's dive into the interview. So welcome, Tara. I'm so excited that you are here with me today. We've been trying for a little while to get this together. Yes. You're such a busy woman. And I'm just thrilled that you made the time to chat to me today. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Very excited.
Let's start like we always do. If you can just share with everybody where your journey started with interiors and sort of lead us to where you are now.
So I guess my journey would be a little bit different to most. So I'm actually a trained nurse practitioner. So I was nursing and basically, in a short spiel, we had two kids very early. Both were very early with a lot of health complications. So at that time, nursing was very demanding. Because of the field that I was in emergency and emergency pediatrics as well. So getting to be able to have that time with the kids was near impossible with, you know, always working overtime, the shifts being quite demanding. So I called it quits for a while just to take care of the kids because they needed that. And then sort of organically through that time off nursing, I sort of started styling my bedroom and sharing it to Instagram with zero intention of anyone to actually be like, wow, look what she's doing. Like it was more an outlet for, I guess, you know, something for me to do while I was looking after the kids that were really unwell. And then it just sort of organically grew from there. It was just me styling a little like 3x3 bedroom. We were actually living with my father-in-law at the time. We were very strapped for cash because of all of the medical bills and so forth. So we were literally in a kid-sized bedroom, like a 3x3, and I was just styling and restyling this bedroom and just sharing it because it was sort of, I guess, filling my cup at the time. And it all just organically grew from there. And then I started upskilling myself in 3D visualization, scheduling, internal drafting. So everything that I do, I've actually taught myself, gone and seeked out, you know, self-education to be able to do things that are actually really high level, which I'm actually really proud of, to be honest, because it's not, you know, obviously a lot of people go to uni and I'm not saying don't do that. Like I actually may one day still go and study interiors and architecture. I still would really love to do that. But for me, that was just the road organically that unfolded for me. I haven't really looked back ever since. It's just been amazing.
I really love your story. And I first started following you, gosh, so many years ago. You were Coco Camellia at the time.
Yes.
And I think you were renting when I kind of started. Were you renting? Yes. And you had a shelf in the space.
We were, because it's so funny you say this. So I had no idea, because I'm a bit of a, look, I would say I'm very introverted. I keep to myself. I'm not a social butterfly. So I sort of sit here with, I guess, like tunnel vision.
In your don't really know world. What's going
And I didn't actually know until I started speaking to other people, this shelf that you're speaking of.
Yes.
This was like a $25 Kmart shelf.
Yeah.
And I bought it because at the time I was like, oh, there's nothing to put on this wall. You know, maybe I'll style this shelf and do something different. And this is, I think, when video just became a thing on Instagram. So it started as like still pictures of me styling the shelf, and then there was no carousel, I don't think, then either.
No, just, I don't think so.
One image on.
Yeah.
And then the videos came. So I was doing time lapses of how to style this shelf. And unbeknownst to me, the shelf that I bought, this $25 shelf, became viral. So I had no idea that apparently everyone was just like, I was like the OG, like shelfie queen of Instagram. I had no idea about
this. I 100% agree, because back when you were doing that and when you went viral styling, you know, this space in the living room, that was before the DIYers were building these massive accounts.
Yes.
This was and I actually use you as an example to my clients when they're starting out and they say, but I've got no content to share. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. There's this girl. And I tell them, I honestly tell them your story, because there's always ways to create content in your kind of signature style. And I think that you just did that so well. And like you, as you said, you started in your own little bubble and just creating from passion and creativity. And look where you are now.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think that like that $25 Kmart shelf would lead me to where I am now. But, yeah, I actually had no idea that it was something that would go, because at the time I think people were still very much posting their meals. I think Instagram back then was like, you go to a nice cafe, you share your, I guess, like what you're eating for lunch or breakfast, and then I was sort of like there in this sort of like void where there wasn't much of that going on. So I think it sort of was like fresh, new, exciting, an exciting way to display interiors.
And beautiful. Like, you have a really beautiful style, and I think that really captured people's attention as well.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, at what stage did you kind of, you were doing this and then you went, you know what, I'm going to make a career out of this. I'm going to start, like, did somebody approach you? Like, how did that all evolve?
Yeah, so I'll be honest with you, it was very scary. So it was always when I was doing this in my home, I'm like, I would love to do this for other people. And I sort of sat there and I'm like, how does one do that with no training, no anything? And then I was sort of like, oh, don't worry, I'll just keep styling and faffing around my house for a while. And then very organically, like the whole sort of journey for me has just been very not planned, it just sort of unfolded on its own. I had my first client reach out to me because their living room was dark. It was in an apartment. They found me on Instagram. And I remember saying to my husband, like, oh, this person wants to work with me. Like, I'll just ignore them. Like, I don't really know what to do. And he's just like, well, they come to you for like a reason. Like, they like what you do. They resonate with you. Why don't you just see what happens? I'm like, oh, my goodness, what do I charge? What do I do? Yeah. What do I wear? What do I bring to this appointment? It was all very daunting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it was also when you step outside your comfort zone, which is very uncomfortable for me to go and try something new. I'm a very, like, systematic, analytical person in that sense. It was the best decision I ever did to style this person's living room. And we went on a like shopping trip to, I think it was IKEA, Freedom. We picked out all these things and they honestly, they're like, this is the best thing I've ever done. Like, this was amazing. I'm like, okay, like I've actually given someone value here, which I think was like a really cool experience to think, you know, what I've actually done and this skill set that I have, like this natural ability to see and view style, compositions of color, materials, fabrics, all of that, like I've been able to add value to someone.
Absolutely.
So that was the sort of light bulb moment where I'm like, like this could be, you know, something that I really enjoy. Like, I think I'm done with nursing. Like, let's try and figure out how we make this work now.
I love that. And I think you made a really good point, is that you are providing value to somebody else and to their home that they can't do themselves. And that's something that, you know, comes up a lot in the work that I do, because I don't know whether it's a female thing. We just don't sort of value what we bring to the table as much, and we don't price our services as much as we should.
100%. Mm. And like, if I was honest with you, I think even maybe like 18 months, 2 years ago, I still feel like I was underpricing.
Yeah.
Not to win a job, not because I was capable. I think like you just sort of had this quiet voice in the back of your head being like, will someone really pay me to do that?
I can't charge that.
Yeah, I can't charge that. Like that's insanity. And I think it's sort of, you know, I've been burnt quite a few times along the way through pricing, clients not paying, builders not paying, stealing product, like all sorts of things. Yeah, I've been burnt pretty badly. And I think that sort of builds resilience to be like, well, hang on, if you're going to potentially burn me, potentially waste my time.
Risk, yeah.
Yeah, like it's risk. So, you know, having all the proper contracts in place, charging what you're worth so you cover all of the unforeseeables. Now that you've got the experience, you sort of know, okay, well, I've allowed for, say, 10 site visits. Is that potentially going to blow out to 20 site visits? Do we put a contingency in for that, or do we say let's charge by the hour for site visits, for example? So I think it's just covering, you know, all bases so that you really do charge what you're worth and just backing yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And so if any stylists that are listening that are in those early phases, what would you say to them would be a great advice to kind of stand out in that those beginning years to attract the clients that they want to attract?
I think it's also, I guess where I started was a little bit more unique. I mean, it still could be the same. I feel like Instagram is not as organic in terms of reach, content, people really getting an authentic experience. A lot of it is AI, pre-production sort of videos and all sorts of things. So I think back when I started, and I still think the best advice I can give anyone is collaborate. Reach out to brands, suppliers you want to work with, whether it's like a window furnishings company. See how you can work together on like your first project so you can cross-promote each other. You know, marketing is a really powerful tool. Supporting yourself with suppliers and networks will also help boost your business as well. So you're almost getting a, I guess, trusted voice in the community, if that makes sense. And just, collaborating. And I'm not saying it necessarily has to be for free. I mean, early on, I did a lot of free work, not design work essentially, but collaborating with brands to share sofas and all of these things, which actually really helped me get clients. Not that they're directly linked, but, you know, posting a sofa and showing how I've decorated my house then led to, wow, this is a great new sofa, like, and she's made her house look like this, let's hire her. So you never know what door will unlock a new opportunity through collaboration and networking.
That's really great advice. Thank you for sharing that, because I think, you know, there's so many people trying to make it in the industry, and in some ways a lot of the people that are further along are quite closed about how they succeeded and what you can do. So that's something that people can really take on board and, yeah, add to their own business. So let's go back. You changed the business name and your Instagram handle from Coco Camellia to your name, Tara Wacolski. Why did you make that change, and did that impact your business in any way? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think the change was basically, so again, very like, I'm very, I guess, entrepreneurial. So I was, previous to this, I had an Instagram account that was Coco Camellia. And this is a fashion blogging account. So I used to actually, I think before that I had like 10,000 followers and I was sharing outfits every day, which I actually love fashion, and it's so intertwined with design, with the textiles, fabrics, silhouettes, compositions, you know, what's coming out of Europe sort of dictates what we're doing here as well. So that was that sort of scenario. And I just changed the first letter for my design business, deleted all of the content. Lost a whole heap of followers because I obviously converted from fashion to then something random. And then I just sort of was sitting there. So it was a very random name. There was no thought process to it.
Yeah, there's no meaning behind it.
Nothing. And then it just sort of took off and like my business grew, and I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. Like this doesn't really, like this name doesn't
Didn't feel connected to it.
It's not authentic to me anymore. And I think for me, changing to my my name was a really big thing, a big step, because essentially it's me. Like, we service a lot of clients. We service high-end clients, first home clients, developers, multi-residential, builders. But at the end of the day, I'm a multifaceted studio, but it's me.
Yes.
I do everything. So I'm the first person who picks up the call, and I'm the person who hands over everything. So I think it was more about translating that through my business, that it was a unique touch point in the industry where, you know, I did have aspirations to grow a studio, but it actually doesn't serve me, like, as a person. Like, I don't want to be micromanaging anyone. And I think the name change really just resonated with, this is what you get. I am the business. This is what
this
what
is you the get. Brand.
Mm. This is the brand. I'm the brand. And, like, what, like, I'm here to, like, take you through this whole journey of interior. So that was the reason for the change, because I felt like it was just time to basically showcase, it's me, that's who I am.
Yeah.
So.
And so you do full design projects yes. now from beginning yeah. stages yes. right through to
from like inception to completion now. Yeah.
And so what kind of process do you have in that? And do you, like, a lot of people, clients want to know what softwares to use, and, you know, there's mm-hmm. so many really amazing softwares out there. And then I've also got clients that are still using, which I think is absolutely fine, PowerPoint and an Excel spreadsheet. So yeah. What do you use when you're working?
So I have to give Programmer a huge plug. I love this software. So for years before Programmer was a thing, there was a lot of American-built software, I would say, for designers. And I felt like I tried a few, didn't quite click or gel. And then I was just, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to make my own software. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm sick of using Excel. I'm sick of using all these different things. And then Programmer came to fruition. And I was like, this is amazing. And I'm pretty sure the day they launched or the day that they came out, I'm pretty sure I signed up because I was so excited. So Programmer is heavily used. So we've got schedules, finishes, time tracking. There's whole client portals. The clients can approve, give feedback. It's a very intuitive software program for an interior designer, stylist, project managers to use. So that would be my top program. But I'm also very, like, I know AI is like a big thing, but I've just worked really well at getting really good systems and processes through Canva, Photoshop, Lightroom, Rayon, CAD, SketchUp. So I still use all of those programs. And if I feel like something needs to be finessed, like a 3D render, like, I might chuck it into an AI renderer. But sometimes I don't like how it looks. I feel like it doesn't quite have that human, like, look and feel, so I don't use it. But I'm still very much using those programs, and a lot of people will laugh and be like, girl, get on AI and do all this stuff. But it's just what works for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I probably will evolve eventually.
I'm the same.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, when you have those systems that work and you've had years of building them, and it just becomes really efficient in turning out work, client processes are all in check. I think when you've got something that works and it's really comfortable, quick and easy, it's just, I don't feel like I need to change that at this
That's
stage.
That's great. I think when you're building a premium, you know, high-end brand too, all of that back end has to be so on point and and just working perfectly, because it's part of the whole experience, isn't it?
Yeah, and it will. Like, I think it also for, like, upcoming stylists or designers, like, there will be teething problems along the way. Like, even I think it's even the last 18 months, 2 years is basically since I've had really good back-end systems. There's a lot of trial and error. You might do something for one client that works, but it may not work for the next five clients, for example. So you've got to sort of adjust all of that to suit the broader clientele, not just, you know, but it also has to work for you as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And your style, obviously, very signature style. Like, I used to see your posts come through on social media, and as soon as I saw it, I knew it was yours. You know, you really do have a really beautiful signature style.
Yeah.
How has your style kind of evolved over the years since you first started?
So I think when I first started, Scandinavian interiors was the be-all and end-all of interiors. in Australia. Like there was such a heavy Scandinavian influence on interiors. A lot of the furniture resellers that you'd walk in, even though they were different retailers, everyone had the same sort of Scandinavian style couch or coffee table. So I think in that sort of space when I started, everything was very minimally inclined. I'm still very minimalist. I don't like clutter. I very much like clean lines and injecting texture. So I think the way that my style has evolved, it's still minimal, but I think it's a bit more curated rather than simplistic. There's a bit more dimension, I guess, to like styling pieces, artwork, a bit more exploration with fabrics rather than sort of linens. Like I lived for linen for so long, but, you know, using different velvets or corduroys, like really beautiful fabrications to elevate spaces. So it's evolved. It's still reminiscent of what was, but definitely has evolved into, I guess, a more refined taste and style and palette.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a you have a beautiful style.
Oh, thank you.
Obviously you've really evolved into, you love the design.
Yeah. So I think for me, like I do, I love the styling, the furniture, because really you can have this beautiful architecturally designed building and you can have all the beautiful interiors. If you're not going to style it and furnish it, it really lets down the whole vibe, the whole, like all the hard work you've done, and then you go and put the wrong sofa in, it just ruins the whole space, right? So that is important. Yeah. But I feel like my strongest skill set is actually joinery design, hard finishes, spatial planning. And I think it's particularly spatial planning, I think you can teach it, but I think you really have to have an eye as well. For how to orientate, orientate a kitchen to where windows are. And I think it does take a really particular eye for detail to understand how all of that works together. And I love
that. You found your calling. Absolutely.
No, it's been great. It's been, and I'm always learning. That's the thing. I think with design, things evolve. Like it's always an evolving industry. So you're always upskilling. You're always learning new things, which I think is really great. And it's fun. It keeps it really interesting.
You mentioned before that you do residential, you work with builders, developers. So there's that generally the kind of work that you do, homes? And
So all of my, I guess, 90% of my business is private residential. Mm-hmm. I do work with developers, and I would say not that it's passive income, but the developers that I work with feed me a lot of work. So essentially it is passive income. So I know that those developers, or I know that those jobs are going to be coming in on a yearly to quarterly basis.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, I guess, like a passive income for my business.
Yeah.
Then you've got your bigger, I guess, private residential jobs, a lot of renovations that I'm actually doing. I feel like my business has somehow moved into, I guess, not that I'm not doing new builds, a lot of renovations. I'd say 80% of the private residential I do is actually renovation, not new build anymore, which is great, which I absolutely love, because you get to go and, you know, create the most beautiful bespoke joinery. You can, you know, elevate ceiling heights, open up back spaces.
I love renovation.
Very exciting.
Definitely love them over new builds.
Yes, yeah. So that would be sort of my business. But then I also have, and I feel like it's really important for designers to realize that, and stylists, if I could give any advice, is to not have sort of one clientele. Mm-hmm. Like there's different, you know, for the larger residential projects, I may only take, say, 4 in a year because they will span a longer time process. My developers are much quicker turnover because it's hard finishes. They generally have all their joinery done. I may tweak their joinery, but it's all hard finish selections. So that's pretty quick and out the door. It's done. So fast turnover. Then you have, then I have a design on demand offering, which is a consult and a small review, and it's done.
Is that something that you, like when you're a little bit quieter and you feel like you've got a bit of time, it's like this little offer that you can throw out there and...
I think it's just definitely like those sort of one-off consult services are great fillers for when you're having, you know, maybe your job's finished earlier than expected. You're like, okay, I can take on some more of these one-off consults. So I feel like having multiple services really can you know, create better cash flow within the business as well, rather than, you know, some quieter months because you're waiting for bigger jobs, because they're obviously a higher dollar point or higher dollar value. But having those little fillers is really great for, you know, those times when you've got jobs that are finishing and, you know, you may have quieter months towards Christmas or after Christmas.
Yeah, I do that with my clients, and we kind of curate a special kind of offer that's really aligned with them and what they love. That is also just a really like a quick win for the client as well. Like it's, you know, clients that are just stuck on one room or on understanding their architectural drawings or something. They just need someone to come in and give them a bit of clarity. So yeah, I really love that. So you mentioned before about having a few issues along the way. I am very big on being very open about mistakes that I've made or stuff ups that have happened. So do you want to share one with us so that people don't feel so alone out there in there?
Mine may not be the traditional, I guess, thought process of stuff ups, but I would say I'm a very intuitive person. So I'm very, didn't realize until later in business or even later in life that I'm very intuitive, very good at picking up on micro expressions and, you know, reading people and situations very quickly. And I think along the way, if I didn't listen to my gut, my intuition, I probably wouldn't have been burnt so many times. So I think it's also, I think the message I'm trying to say in less words would be that if something doesn't feel right, like if a client reaches out, you have a conversation, you're sort of sitting there and it doesn't quite gel, there's something that doesn't feel right, maybe you're worried or concerned based off their, you know, feedback or conversation, they may have issues paying you, or you feel like this client's going to consume a lot of your time but they're not willing to pay the dollar amount that it's worth, you know, just spotting red flags early to avoid, I guess, chaos and issues later on. So I think that's something I've really learnt in business along the way. And to be honest, like I don't take every client that inquires. Like I've got, I think, 8 inquiries this week that have come into my inbox, and I'm vetting them, but I may only take 2 of them because I've already seen just from some of the, you know, lines that they've written that they're probably not the client that's going to be great to work with for my processes and what they're going to be wanting.
I'm so glad you shared that. That's a big thing that I do talk about on this podcast is intuition. And that as creatives, we are very intuitive. And also that in just the inner feeling and listening to it, because I'm the same. The ones that I felt like, oh, you're going to be a problem, you're a little bit negative, or there's just something that just doesn't feel right with me, and I took them on, they were the ones that, you know, were questioning everything or dragging their feet, or, you know, and it's, you know, when you're starting out, it's very hard to say no, obviously, to projects 100%. Because it doesn't feel right. But as you start going along and you've got more projects coming in, and you do have that privilege of being able to say no to projects, definitely listen to your gut. And so I'm so glad you shared that.
I think it's important to like mention, like, you don't have to take every job that comes into your inbox. By all means, if they're all filling your cup, go for it. But there'll be ones that come in. Like, I've had a couple of clients who I just don't work with clients if they hit my inbox. And it may be a wrong thing to say, but like the first thing, do you offer trade discounts? What is your trade discount? So I sort of sit there and I think, oh, like, that's fair enough. It's a fair question to ask, but do they value my skill set as a designer, or are they valuing the discount that I bring? So it's sort of a situation where, like, if I choose to work with this client, are they going to appreciate my skill set or any design that I offer, or are they just going to tell me what they want to buy and then expect me to
and use the discount?
So I think that's sort of a situation. I don't really work with clients who are just after discounts anymore. It doesn't serve me, and it's not a great process for them as well, because I don't think they get the service that they want. Like, I'm here to provide like a high level service, and obviously, you know, trade offerings is part of that and industry offerings is part of that, but it's not the bread and butter of the service that I offer. So
Yes. And you mentioned before that you are an introvert. I'm an introvert as well. Even though I have a podcast, I am, because I'm sitting in my own little space in here.
Yeah, I get that, because I'm like, for me to sit here and talk one-on-one,
yes,
no issues, no issues. But for me, like, I get invited to a lot of events and I say to my husband, no, I'm not going. Like, it's just not happening. Yeah. He's like, just go. I'm like, oh, I'm not going unless I go with someone. And I will. I think I do generally come across as rude, really shut off, because I'm the person who'll stand in the back corner and wait for someone to approach me. Like, I'm not going out and speaking to anyone. So, yeah, but it's also great having your own business. I think it suits being a very, like, introverted person. I'm not a very outgoing person, even though I may seem that way. I guess it's more I'm comfortable in, you know, what I do with my business.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you and I met in person. I went to an event that you hosted actually with Crystal Bailey in Art and Framing Co.
Oh, all I did those you there. Yes, that was such a long time ago.
I went to that event that you had in Art and Framing Co. with Crystal on my own. I was just standing there, felt like the biggest loser. But that's why I'm asking, because I think it's like it's really important for us to network. It's really important for us to collaborate and be kind of out there amongst other designers and what's going on and all of that. And I found it so, so hard. And obviously you do too. So people, you're not alone out there.
Well, I think it's also like, you know, I've been, I guess, around for a while now. So, and I still like just don't enjoy the social aspect of my business. Like, even like, I've got suppliers I use all the time who I've become really great friends with, and, you know, I have those really good relationships and feel comfortable with them. If I have to go to a new supplier, it's like pit in my stomach. What am I going to say? Are they going to give me business? Are they going to allow me to sign up to trade? Like, all of these really ridiculous things that you think as like an introvert, not because you don't have confidence, but because you just don't know. I don't like the unexpected conversations. I like to sort of pre-run in my head what's going to happen. Yeah. So it is interesting, but it's So all of the introverts, you're not alone.
No, absolutely not. How do you go going on site when you're, because I used to find that quite like hard to go on site, and you've got all the trades there and I used to find that hard.
So initially, I really struggled, because I think I also, being self-taught in the industry, it's sort of like, well, who are you? Who are you to tell me or give me feedback or advice? And I think I learned very quickly. I upskilled. Like, there's so much knowledge I have across stone, joinery, like really what seems ridiculous, hinges, different types of hinges and things. And all of the knowledge I've learnt and further educated myself on has allowed me to have more confidence on site. So I think if you're feeling, I guess, a bit, you know, worried about going on site, or you don't know how to quite behave, just prepare yourself. Prepare yourself the best way you can. If you're going on a job meeting or a site meeting, for joinery, have a think about some of the questions that may come up. Why are you going to that meeting? Is there because there's an issue with colours? Is there an issue with hinge placement, like a door's opening too close to something else? Like, how do you have answers for some of the questions that may pop up? So I think it's better to be, you know, try and be prepared for those situations.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's great advice. So let's switch directions a little bit. I want to go a little bit more into that whole kind of being a mum, working quite, you know, very busily. How do you kind of manage that, and with boundaries, and are there any non-negotiables within that kind of balance?
So we have, for those of you who may not know me, we have three children now. We've got a 9, a 10, and a 2.5-year-old. And look, that's a busy lifestyle on its own. But then you add into the mix our daughter, she's an elite gymnast. Mm. So she's training 20 hours a week.
Nice.
So very busy. Like, that's 5 hours in the car a week to her training that, you know, I lose as like a business owner, a mum. My son plays cricket. He'd probably pick up tennis or something else in the winter break as well. And then our little one is just starting to explore everything because he's 2.5. He doesn't go to kinder, so he comes to all my site visits where possible. He comes everywhere with me, which is great. I wouldn't change it. But finding the balance is, I guess, putting in non-negotiables with clients. So for example, I don't work Mondays and Fridays. These are my days to get on top of any admin I've missed, plan the week ahead if something new has come up with any, you know, of the kids' sports or there's competitions for gymnastics, like how do I then take those days off and navigate my workload? I'm not contactable after between or outside of 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Like I'm not going to answer calls. Like I'm doing school pickup, drop off. Like these are like I'm a mum first. Yes, I have a business and my business is really important, but I have three little kids that also need me and that's essential for me. So it's setting parameters, letting clients know, hey, if you guys text me at 10 p.m. at night, I'll get back to you the next day within my business hours. So it's just, yeah, I guess setting those boundaries so that, you know, you've got that good balance. And I do really feel like I have a good balance. I actually really enjoy the balance I've got. I'm in a really lucky position where I can say no to jobs if I feel like my life's too chaotic with the kids. I just don't take the work if it doesn't serve me or it's not a great opportunity or it's not a quite the right fit.
Yeah. Do you have staff that help you?
No, it's just me. Last couple of years, when I've taken on some extra work or what I would say is, you know, beyond what I feel like, oh, like I'm a bit at capacity, but that's a great job, I might pass off that drafting to like a contractor that I use. I've trained them on how to draft in the exact same way that I do. So all of the work, and you know, for anyone who's looking to outsource something like drafting, there will be teething problems, you know, getting in line with how you want things to be drafted, how you want your drafting to appear. My drafting is a bit more of a minimalistic style as well, like a bit more like curated with like a 3D render attached and things like that. But it's more being able to offload that 20 or 30 hours so I can keep cracking on with another job.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's not always. I like to still do all of that and I can, but it's those overflow jobs where I'm like, oh, like it's too good of a job to pass up. I'll take it, but I'll offload that to free up time.
How do you look after yourself? How do you make sure that you're filling your own cup and you're, you know, healthy and, yeah.
So, I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. Me looking after myself has been a struggle with the three kids because we have such a busy lifestyle. My husband also travels an enormous amount for work. So he's actually going to, I'm just looking at the calendar, he's actually going to Sydney next week for 3 or 4 days. So he travels nationally and internationally. So sometimes health is on the back burner for me, but I've actually become really good. Like I'm making sure I'm walking 20,000 steps a day.
So that's that means a lot.
Yeah, that, well, I feel like it's just necessary. Like I have a job that's essentially a desk job. If I'm not outsourcing on site, I'm sitting down doing schedules, plans. So, you know, the kids keep me on my feet, but yeah, I try and
you're getting a lot of steps in chasing them around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's just, you know, if it's walking on the treadmill for like an hour or an hour and a half just to get those extra steps in, like that's something I'm doing non-negotiable every day at the moment. So that's a very small step. But health and fitness, I'm very much okay with this is the season that I'm in with kids. Orlando will go to school in a couple of years and that's when I can really start to look after myself to the level I would love to. So I'm okay with it being fitting in what I can for now. Then I'll go back to Pilates. I might go and start running again, you know, when I've got that time. So
do you do any kind of work like on your mindset? You know, like a lot of us struggle with lack of confidence, like we've talked about in some areas, or monkey mind where you're just overthinking and you can't switch your brain off. Do you have any practices that you use to kind of help you with that?
So no, but no. I really need to look at them.
Yeah.
I'm very much the person who has 50 tabs open. So I've got like all the jobs open in my mind and, you know, I'm very much, everything's very internal. Like I overthink, overprocess. I'm very detail-oriented. Very detail oriented, which is a blessing, but it's also a curse sometimes. Where you can sort of sit, like, my husband always laughs. He's like, would you just start the job? And then sometimes I'll just sit there in front of my computer, mulling over way too many details, and it actually stops me from starting something. So I think, you know, sometime this year when I've got a bit more time and like my schedule sort of settles, I will look at, you know, better ways to deal with like mindfulness, I guess.
Absolutely.
Because I feel it is important, not necessarily because I have a negative mindset, but just, I guess, quietening down a lot of the like chaos and business and scheduling.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So this podcast is about designing a life that you love.
Yeah.
How have you designed and are designing a life that you love?
That's a really good question. So I think essentially success and like designing a life that everyone likes or loves looks different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So for some, it may be I'm going to make $1 million in my first 10 years of business, or I want to get to six figures. For me, designing a life that I love was all about creating freedom for me to look after my kids. So my kids were very sick early on. My daughter, she's had like nine surgeries. My son was very early. He was 31 weeks, had a lot of lung issues. They still have issues that pop up. So for me, it was about how do I design a business that caters for me to be a full-time stay-at-home mum? How do I do that? And I feel like I was actually saying to my husband, I think yesterday or the day before, like I've done it. Like this is it. Like I've created a business that serves us, serves me as a mother. And that's what success looks like to me. It doesn't mean that, you know, I do have other like metrics I'd like to hit, like take on XYZ jobs or do this, but not at the trade-off for freedom and being able to manage my time. Because I think the most important thing I learned was when I was nursing, I was accountable to someone else. My time was accountable to someone else and I had no control over when I could do things for my family. Alleviating that stress and being able to say, I can pick up the kids every day from school, drop them off, watch all their sports, they're sick, that's okay. I'm working from home today, not an issue. So being able to cater for that lifestyle, that was, you know, so important, and I've been able to do that, which is a huge win for me.
Well done. Yeah. And that's one of my biggest, you know, I look back now and I think that to me, it's not about the money I earned. It's not about the projects that I did. It's more, it's that I got to stay home with my children. I don't think I missed an event at school. Yeah, I was always there picking them up after school and sitting with them at afternoon tea. And I know that's not for everyone. That's not everybody's goal. And that is absolutely okay. But for me, that's what was success to me. And I think that interiors is a beautiful way to do that. In the work that we do, you can be
alone. Yeah, I think it's great because you can really have that balance. And I think it's like even, you know, I've like know a lot of my builders and suppliers now and, you know, they know like Orlando they're like, oh, where's Orlando today? Like they're sad when he doesn't come to work, you know, like people just get to know how you operate. They know that, you know, you've got three kids or you've got this going on and like it's fine, get back to us when you can. And not that that's what it's about, like in terms of leniency, but it's just a nicer way to do business when you've created something that works for you. And by all means, when he's in school, like I was jokingly saying to one of my suppliers, watch out, like I'll be back all over the gram, winning jobs, doing collabs, like watch out because it's a different season. Like I've still got like young kids. And I'm quieter. I don't really, you know, I'm doing loads of projects. I'm not photographing them as much anymore. I'm just happy to just be. I don't really need to market. I think I'm really good at or very clever at marketing. Like I'll intentionally put stories up targeting a specific audience and I'll literally get the inquiry 3 or 4 hours later. So I think, you know, photographing projects and doing all of that, like it's just not that important to me right now.
What would you do? Or just before we move on to the last question, when you just said about marketing and putting a story up, how would you target, how would you position that story?
It's really interesting. So because I didn't realize, like I had someone from marketing actually say, I can see your silent marketing strategy and it's like brilliant. And
you're
I was
like,
just
what?
Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And they like alerted me to this fact and I was like, oh, like I am doing that without even realizing. So I think I've become very strategic in the content that I share to be able to draw in inquiry because I mean, a lot of my business is referral as well and word of mouth, but it's still a lot of it comes through my Instagram, which then goes through my website for inquiry. So even just for instance, I was at a client consult earlier this week, and I put up a story about pool tiles, for example, saying like, I think it was something like pool tile madness, unless you know what you're doing. So instantly that was going to trigger people who are like, oh my God, I'm in the middle of my renovation. I really don't know what I'm doing. And I got 3 inquiries after posting that story for people in the middle of a renovation. So I think it's just knowing how to speak to people. You know, that's the value you're going to provide. I'm going to fix that issue for you. Like, you're not really sure what you're doing with color selections. I can help you do that. Like, I've helped this client do that. So I think it's just, yeah, a more gentle way of marketing. Like, I'm not very big on loud marketing. That's just not me as a person. I'm just very subtle, putting my skills out there.
Yes. Yeah. No, you do. Obviously, you do it well.
Yeah.
So last question, what is next for Tara Wacolski? What are your big goals that you're striving for in your business?
Oh, well, there's always the goal and aspiration to open a studio, but that will come sometime after the kids are all in school. So that will definitely be on the list. But goals and aspirations would be to, I take clients interstate, but an international client would be a goal. I've had one inquiry from, I think, LA, but it wasn't just quite the right fit. So having an international client that will fly me over to do their work for them, that will be big on the list. But then there's also other sort of side things that I'm working on that are not necessarily design business, but they're other businesses as well.
Ah, so you've got another account, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, I said to my husband, like, I'm so keen on fashion. So I feel like when the kids go back to school, I probably will evidently start sharing like outfits more and things like that, because that is something I'm so passionate about. I just love fashion, love textiles. So, I mean, I'm very much a person who doesn't sit still. I'm always thinking of different things to do, different things. You know, I was thinking of a gymnastics business with my daughter, because there's a huge gap in the market. I'm not going to say what it is because we probably are going to do it.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, just heaps of different, like, I just love creating product, new things. I have so many ideas. It's just really,
I think that's actually, sorry, it's like, it goes with the creative, doesn't it? We are full of ideas all the time, and it's which one am I going to actually?
Yeah, it's which one do I execute? Yes. I've got 10 really good business ideas here. Which one is feasible? What do I do?
Yeah.
So there will be like lots of other things that I'll be working on.
Mm.
I don't know whether to say it. I've written a children's book.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in the process of like a picture book. So I'm actually in the process of, you know, finalizing those things. I don't know when I'll look to publish it, but, you know, just sitting and doing those things that fill my cup as well, which I think are important, because it's almost like even though that seems like more work, it's almost like a brain break from design and, you know, being a mum, like it's another creative outlet.
Yeah.
So there's just, lots of things that could pop up in the future. So you'll have to stay tuned.
Yeah. Do you know what your human design is?
No, what is that?
Human design. If you ever do it and you go online and you do it, it's you can do it online. It'll tell you whether you're a projector based on your birth.
Is it like a personality test?
It's kind of like that. And so I'm a projector. I'm someone who like will keep to myself, but I will wait to be invited into working with somebody. I won't push it. And it's really interesting. And when you learn what you are, you kind of go, oh, that's why I'm like that. Like I'm like you. I'm ideas, go, 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 go. But then I'll fall in a heap and I'm like burnt out. I need a break.
Yeah. Well, it's actually funny you say that, because when I had Orlando, the year I had him, I wasn't able to breastfeed. So I had to pump. And I was pumping, and I had low milk supply. So I was pumping 6 times a day. Like, it was a lot. So, and I was still working full time because he was a baby, you know, you just take them everywhere. They sleep, they feed, it's fine. But I didn't realize until, you know, even I think it was maybe 6 months ago, my body was just shot. Like, I just fell in complete exhaustion. I was just like, I'm done. Like, I can't do anymore. I sort of didn't take on as much design work because I just needed that break. So I think it is like really important to notice that like we're not all superheroes. Mm-hmm. Like, we can have a little time to like, you listen know, have a break,
yeah.
listen to your body. Because I think for so long, when you're creative, but you're also like very, you know, driven and passionate, you sort of forget, you know, the warning signs of your body being like, hey, it's okay to sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe drink some water.
Yeah.
Sit down for a bit, you know. So it's really important as well.
I could go on. I could keep asking you question after question. I really love this chat. Do you want to share with everybody your Instagram handle and where they can follow along?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is my name. So it's just at Tara Wacholski. So I'm sure you'll have it written somewhere.
I will. I'll put it in the show notes. Yes.
Oh, amazing. And yeah, website's the same. So it's just tarawacholski.com.au. And if you are ever looking for an end-to-end interior designer who will be there from inception to completion,
yeah.
that is me. Which is great. I think it's a more personable approach to deal with someone right the way through. So I think it's something really unique that I'm able to bring. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I know that my listeners are going to love this conversation.
Oh, I hope
and
so.
And, yeah, I'm just glad that we finally got to get this connected.
I know. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.